So looking back on this session, from my perspective from Ketchikan, it seemed like the biggest issue was around education funding. And I know you got that big bipartisan bill through early in the session with the intent of having schools know where they stood on education funding early on in the year, so they wouldn't end up where they did this year, not knowing how much funding they'd have. I wonder if you can just reflect on that process. I guess, were you caught off guard by Governor Dunleavy's veto of that bill?
No, not at all. The Senate's been focusing on $680 BSA increase for 2 years now. So when we started this year, we had in the previous budget $680, and my duty this year was in charge of the operating budget in the Senate. So I included that on day one and planned the entire budget with that in it, $680, which is about almost $175 million increase. And then I have communication with the superintendents on the likelihood of that materializing. So turned out to be highly likely the 680 is going to stick and not be vetoed. I'd be very surprised if it's going to be vetoed at all. As far as when the timing is, it's just the way the structure is. The effect of the appropriations when the governor signs it, and that takes effect July 1. So I recognize the timing issue of that superintendents have of notification due to their contracts with their employees, but that just comes with the territory. There's little likelihood that that's going to change. But hopefully other superintendents are getting information from their elected officials on where they think the BSA will land for the year so they can plan their budgets.
Yeah, yeah. Just listening to the conversations at the school board level, there was a lot of reluctance to presume that a certain amount of funding was coming. Mm-hmm. And I think to this day, the budget that they're assuming is assuming no increase in the BSA amount, because I mean they saw what the governor did last year, cutting it in half, and how could you be certain that the money was coming until it's on the table, right? So
only certainty is death and taxes.
Right.
But there's a reasonable expectation of the ending dollar amount.
Yeah.
That wasn't going to be the statutory BSA number, in other words, a zero increase. He wasn't going to cut it $345 from last year. That would be an actual reduction. So he could, you know, and he would risk most likely, more pressure on a veto override.
Yeah. Do you think there's any better outlook of getting a permanent BSA increase passed next session?
So when you refer to a permanent, that's a statutory number within the I would say yes. The 680 is pretty much the floor from what I can see. So there's no reason not to change the statutory formula to, in effect, absorb that 680. I would be surprised if we reduced it at all from that next year.
Mm. Yeah. When the governor was asked about why he didn't support that original bill, he said things like he wanted to see overall education reform before that permanent BSA increase happened. I think his two
benchmarks, performance benchmarks.
Right.
He wants a list of other things.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to salaries, he talks about bonuses.
I don't tie all that stuff together personally.
You don't? Okay.
That's the governor, right? He has a different role than I do. So looking at from the budget perspective, it was pretty clear that the BSA needed to be moved to me several years ago. And I think if you go back and look at some of the discussions here, probably could go back as maybe even as far as 4 years. So this pressure has been slowly building, and we just needed to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate was steadfast on 680. It didn't matter if there was the veto votes to override it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That was the number in the budget. I put it in January and built all the remaining budget components with that included.
Okay.
On the operating budget. In my opinion, we should just change the BSA and move on. We got other things to work on. We have to raise our algebra scores and our math scores and our reading scores, and We have housing issues and transportation issues with education. We have lots of things that we can spend some time on versus just squabbling about a formula in a statute.
Mm-hmm.
We need to move on and work on some of these other issues. Housing is a big issue across the state.
Yeah.
In particularly in Western Alaska, but even in Southeast, it's a big issue. We bring in an entry-level teacher and have them try to afford housing and have them ever have hope of owning their own home. You know, it's questionable.
Is there anything the state can do to help the housing issue? I mean, it's
yes. One of the things we did this year in the budget, it's a new pilot program. There's $4 million that goes to Alaska Housing, and they will act as the referee, and they will allocate that money as needed between the university's lands division, DNR, Department of Natural Resources, and their lands, and mental health. In their lands, on their subdivisions. Say the university has some land and they want to do a subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
Say it costs $2 million to put the roads, water, and power in, and they won't do it because they're not going to make any money because the cost of putting the utilities in consumes all your sales of your land. So they can go to Alaska Housing and say they get $1 million from Alaska Housing. Now they only have $1 million invested in the subdivision. Mm-hmm. Then their return rate goes up, right? Then they want to go subdivide it, do the development because they're making money.
Right.
And then the question is, how does Alaska Housing get a couple pennies back so they can do another project?
Yeah.
And that would be the property then would go on the tax rolls and part of the property tax in, maybe half of it for 10 years or all of it for 5 years or whatever would go back to Alaska Housing.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. How would you say that this session went for your district at large? Were there any notable capital projects that you got approved for this region?
Well, let's just back up a little bit. So when we look at the last several years, we had no district projects to speak of.
Mm.
They were all just state, mostly state projects, you know, off of major maintenance lists and state agency issues and so on and so forth, because the budgets were so tight. This year, we had the opportunity with the revenues and oil prices that we had some funds for individual legislative districts that we can move around. So there was, gosh, I don't know, $3.6 million, I think, in the Senate district I had to sprinkle around. So we put some money in the ball field here for bleachers, 700 and some thousand.
Mm, the new Walker field, is that what you're talking about?
Yes. And then the building that the veterans building that got burned down.
Legion.
Legion, yeah, the American Legion building.
Mm-hmm.
We just drove by that. So the American Legion was kind of high on the list along with the ball field. The Legion, mainly because of arson, and they burnt the building down and it needs to get replaced, right? That was pretty much an insult to all our veterans. And then I've been trying to help with that ball field for years since we built the one in Sitka. We're going to get the one built here, and then we run into budget constraints and from deficits and then COVID and, you know, so on and so forth. So we finally got to the point where I could help a little bit, and the community had already moved forward, and so I had to get on the bandwagon or get left behind. So I want to see the build-out of the you know, covered bleachers and participate in that field. So those are the two bigger things in district. They're small in the scheme of a lot of things, but they make a big impact on our community. Another issue we're working on, the rail belt from basically Kenai up to Fairbanks needs to have their major infrastructure upgrade on their intertie. Well, they need votes. Right, and that's coming next year. We're working on a bond package to facilitate that. So we're looking at trying to build some of our electrical generation and distribution in this district out and attach it to and work it with their desire to move their intertie forward.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at another turbine in the SEPA grid, along with plugging in the cruise ships.
Mm.
So we'll be working on that. Also, I need to have some conversations with the City Hall on the local electric utility to see if we can help there with some of the maintenance issues there.
The Ketchikan Electric Utility?
Yes. So when the when the rail belt is on board for a big, almost billion-dollar infrastructure upgrade, they need votes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I need projects.
Yeah.
So therein lies the art of the deal, right?
Mm.
And the next couple of years, we have a really good opportunity to move our electrical infrastructure forward with both generation and distribution, recognizing there's, you know, the recent news of the utility here in Ketchikan having some challenges. I think that's momentarily. We'll work through that issue. And we are in a unique position in Southeast that we have renewable hydro, and we should continue to expand that and minimize our reliance on diesel generation as much as absolutely possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to trying to get another turbine in line between here and in Petersburg on the SEPA grid.
Hydro turbine. Mm-hmm. I should just follow up on the because you mentioned our electric utility and mm-hmm. grid situation here. Do you think that's something that the state could potentially help with?
I want to meet with City Hall this fall and kind of go through some of that issue with them when we look at electrifying the cruise ships and some more grid expansion between Metlakatla and Cake, which would include, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell up the corridor, and have that dialogue to see if what can possibly the state do to assist in that. Clearly, if we're going to put more generation on the system and more load, we got to have, the rest of it not blow apart in the meantime. So there's always something to do.
Yeah.
So that's a new challenge for us, but we'll work through it. And we fixed other things before. We'll fix this one too.
All righty.
There's one question that was asked in an earlier interview in Petersburg about the student lunch program.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the way it was put together was, I thought, not as clear as it should be.
Okay.
Because when I listened to the story, it sounded like we in the legislature or in the Senate decided we weren't going to fund school lunches, free lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
It was eliminated, and it wasn't eliminated at all.
Mm.
It's the furthest thing from what went on.
Okay.
So during COVID, the federal government came in and had free lunch for everybody, all the kids. And the state isn't going to backfill all the COVID money. So when the COVID money ran out, we reverted back to the standard practice on free lunch. So if you have, if you're at 130% of the poverty rate, you have, or below, you have free lunches. And if you have a reduced price, if you're between 130 and 185% of poverty. So there was an amendment on the floor of the House that would have taken funds from the Department of Corrections, which we have to feed our prisoners, and make a free lunch program backfill the COVID money. Well, so when we put the budget together at the conference committee, we removed that out of the final budget.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to have a discussion on having free lunch for everybody in K-12, that's fine. We can have that through the budget process. But you don't put an amendment on the floor of one of the bodies and take money out of another entity, leaving a hole that you just created to fund something else. You have to have a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't play those games. But if you are a low income or no income family, the last thing the state's going to do is starve our kids in school. That's not going to happen, because if they don't have a good meal, breakfast and lunch, they won't learn in school.
I wonder, I'm curious how you feel about the state of the budget. Do you think that the way that the budget is working currently is sustainable into the future? I mean, do you see oil prices staying at a point that can keep us going for a while, or will we need some other revenue source at some point soon?
Taxes? No.
I didn't use the T word.
Right. But I don't think at this point we don't need them.
Okay.
This budget's built on $78 and we're in surplus. If the budget numbers come in and we're in the low 80s, there'll be an extra dividend in a year, energy's assistant dividend. In the price range we're at, with oil, we're okay. If oil goes to $50 or $60, we got a problem. It's hard to predict what oil prices are. You know, it's like predicting the world economy, wars and so on and so forth, and recessions. You know, they're coming, but you just don't know when. So we're in better shape now than we were the last several years, and we're slowly getting better. We're building up our savings a little bit at a time. We got about $2.5 billion in roughly in our main savings account. The permanent fund is healthy. It's got some challenges, but it's not in any imminent danger of blowing up. There's $80 billion sitting there.
I want to talk a little bit about the PFD.
Oh yeah.
When it comes to budget stuff, I know it's a hot topic, something mm-hmm. people are passionate about. Mm-hmm. I think you settled on a number around
25% or
right, 1,600 or so with the energy relief, right? Do you feel that you landed on a good number for this session?
Yes. The Senate's had a position since around 2017 that we should have a 25% dividend. Mm. That's a quarter of the 5% payout. And when we looked at the financial projections of the permanent fund and the state, that seemed to be a targeted number that was deliverable. It's not in a perfect world on every scenario, but it was reasonable. And at 50% of the 5% payout, state's going to go broke. It doesn't work. I mean, you're dealing with almost $1 billion extra in payments. And then when the number even goes above that to the current statutory formula, that's about 40 years old, it's even worse. You'd run the place out of money, literally. And that debate has kind of died down the last few years because even the ones that the folks that want to have a bigger dividend realize that they can't do it. It's undeliverable. State can't maintain it. So I think a lot of the wind has come out of their sails. There's been numerous people around the state that have got elected to office on that very platform, a big dividend. But at the end of the day, you have to run your school system. You have to have prisons. You got to have courts. You got to have a DOT for airports and roads. You got to have a fish and game. You know, you've got all these agencies. You have to run a state, and it costs money.
But you'd like to see that formula changed.
Yes, to 25%. We had very little debate on the dividend this year.
Yeah, it seemed like it, especially compared to previous years.
Right, because they're realizing that, you know, we could produce a $1,360 dividend this year, take care of a lot of other issues, school funding, deferred maintenance of schools, some of our road issues, even be able to help a little bit with the Legion and ball field bleachers and little things like that. A few years ago, we couldn't even do that. Mm-hmm. So we are making progress.